In one of the tshuva drushes of Rav Soloveitchik, he asks the following question. How many times did Jews enter Eretz Yisrael? The question is not a historic one. The question is a halachic one. How many times does halacha recognize something very special and unique about the entry of the Jewish people into Eretz Yisrael? Historically, we know how many entries there were. There was the entry in the days of Yehoshua, and then the return from the Babylonian exile, Ezra and Nehemiah, and then there is the return en masse to Eretz Yisrael in this century, in our days. The halacha sees two entries into Eretz Yisrael. The entry of Yehoshua and the time that they come in the days of Ezra and Nehemiah. The Rambam says the following. The Rambam tells us in the following halacha. The city of Yerushalayim, and I'm talking about the city that is within the walls of Yerushalayim, or that part of the city which has very special holiness. Now, the special Kedusha in Yerushalayim. The Kedusha of Yerushalayim is that you can eat Korban Pesach, for example, within the entire confines of Yerushalayim. There are all sorts of other Korbanot that can be eaten within Yerushalayim. Maaser Sheni is brought to Yerushalayim and is eaten there. Now, what constitutes Yerushalayim? Or for that matter, in the event that we want to add to the city of Yerushalayim, if we want to expand the boundaries and the borders of Yerushalayim, how is it done? It's not simply something that is brought up before the zoning board and decided by the municipal authorities. So the Gemara, and such is the halacha, there's a whole procedure of korbanos toda that are supposed to be brought. You need melech, you need urim v'tumim. There's a whole process whereby, if need be, Yerushalayim is expanded. Or for that matter, we will see the original sanctity of Yerushalayim at Har HaBayit came through a process. Says the Rambam the following. Kol makom shelo naseh b'chol elu, any place where all of this was not done. This entire halachic process of sanctifying Yerushalayim, ukasedra zeh, if it was not done in this order, ein kiddush gomor, it is not holy. V'zeh she'asa Ezra shtei todot, in Sefer Ezra we're told, in Nehemiah we're told, that Ezra made a ceremony and he brought two sacrifices of todot. Says the Rambam, that which was done by Ezra when they returned, Zikaron Husha'asa, it was something that he did only as a commemoration. It was a tekes. It was a ceremony. V'lo v'masof nitkadesh hamakom. Yerushalayim did not become holy by virtue of that which was done by Ezra. Shelo hayosham lo melech v'lo urim v'tumim. There was no king, there was no urim v'tumim, nothing. And they're basic to the process of sanctifying Yerushalayim. So the Rambam asks, how was Yerushalayim made holy? So he answers, "Bekedusha Rishona Shekidsha Shlomo." Yerushalayim became holy because of the original sanctity that was made in this place by Shlomo HaMelech when he built the Beit HaMikdash. Shehu Kidesh et Hazara, he sanctified the courtyards of the Beit HaMikdash, the Har HaBayit Beit Yerushalayim, and he made Yerushalayim holy, l'shaton v'kitchon l'atid l'avo, he made them holy for his time and for all time into eternity. Yerushalayim is kadosh because of that which was done by Shlomo HaMelech. Now, the Rambam differentiates between the sanctity of Yerushalayim on the one hand and the sanctity of the rest of Eretz Yisrael on the other. With regard to Yerushalayim, the Rambam has made it very, very clear that the original Kiddusha in the days of Shlomo remains in force forever. But the sanctity of Eretz Yisrael, the Rambam says, Yehoshua came into the land, he sanctified Eretz Yisrael. But that holiness was only Kiddusha l'shata, it was made holy for its time, but the lo kidesh latid lavo, it did not become holy for all time. When the Churban came, there went the Kedusha of Eretz Yisrael, And when we talk about the Kedusha of Eretz Yisrael here, it's important to know that we're talking about the Kedusha of Eretz Yisrael with regard to Truma and Meiser, Shmita and Yovel, with regard to the mitzvot HaTuyot Baretz. We are not talking here about the innate sanctity of the land. The land was always holy. This is where the world was created. From here began the process of Briat HaOlam. It was holy when Avraham Avinu walked through the land. But there is another level of Kedusha, and that Kedusha is the sanctity with regard to the mitzvot HaTluyot Baretz. So when Yehoshua came into the land, he sanctified it. The Churban came, removed that sanctity, and then when Jews returned to Eretz Yisrael in the days of Ezra, and Ezra sanctified the land again, the second Kedusha of Ezra was Kidshah L'Shata, was holy for its time, but Kidshah L'Atid L'Avon became holy for all time. Today, the sanctity of Eretz Yisrael is because of that which was done in the days of Ezra. So what the Rambam has done here, therefore, is the Rambam differentiates between Yerushalayim and Beit HaMikdash on one hand, and Eretz Yisrael on the other hand. The sanctity of Yerushalayim was once and forever. The sanctity of Eretz Yisrael, first time, didn't last. Second time, it's forever. What's the difference? What's the difference between Yerushalayim and the rest of Eretz Yisrael? The Rambam asks the question himself. And the Rambam says, V'loma ani omer, and why do I say? B'migdash v'Yerushalayim, why do I say that with regard to the Beit HaMikdash and Yerushalayim, Kedusha Rishona, the first sanctity, Kidshah L'Shato Ula Atid Lavo? Why do I say that with regard to Yerushalayim, the very first time it was made holy by Shlomo HaMelech, it remains holy for all time? U'b'kedushat Shar Eretz Yisrael, with regard to the sanctity of the rest of Eretz Yisrael, le'inyan shviyatu masar, with regard to shviyatu masar, v'kiyotzeben, and similarly, lo kitchalot nitlavol, there I say it didn't become holy for all time. What's the difference between Yerushalayim and the rest of Eretz Yisrael? Answers the Rambam. L'fishe kedushat ha-migdash v'Yerushalayim, ipnei ha-shechina, the sanctity of Yerushalayim and the Beit HaMikdash is because of the divine presence. U'shechina eina betela. The divine presence is never removed. Finished. That's it. Shechina eina betela. Once the divine presence sanctifies Migdash v'Yerushalayim, it remains kadosh forever. Shechina eina betela. Can't remove Shechina. V'harehu omer. And he proves it from a pasuk that we learned in Parashat Bechukotai. V'hashimoti et migdashechem, I will destroy your holy places. And the Mishnah in Masechta Megillah says, "Afal pi sheshalamin, though they are desolate, b'kedushatam heim omdim, they remain holy. V'hashimoti, I make desolate migdashechem, still holy, though it is desolate. Afal chiyuv haaretz b'trumot u'maaseros, but the kedusha of Eretz Yisrael with regard to trumot u'maaseros, eino ela mipnei shehu kibush rabin." The only reason it became holy in the days of Yehoshua, because of conquest. The kivan shenilka ha'aretz miyadeim, once the land was taken from them by the hordes of Babylon, destroyed by Nebuchadnezzar, batal ha'kibush, the conquest, is gone, cancelled out, v'niftara min ha'torah mimasrot utrumot, and there it goes, the mitzvot ha'kedushot ba'aretz are gone. The Kivan Shal Ezra, but when Ezra came back to Eretz Yisrael, the Kidshah, and he sanctified the land for a second time, lo Kidshah v'kibush, he didn't sanctify the land through conquest, ela bechazaka shehechezikupa, by taking hold of the land. What does it mean by taking hold of the land? You know what Ezra and Nehemiah did? They settled the land. They made settlements. They were settlers. That was the chazaka shehechezikuba. They settled the land. Chazaka, taking possession, building, plowing, planting. That's how he sanctified the land. Okay, let's get back to what we're talking about. So the Rambam says, he explains. The Rambam explains the difference. Beit HaMikdash and Yerushalayim are because of Shechina. Shechina is never removed. What was the difference between Yehoshua and Ezra? Yehoshua conquered the land. The land was conquered from him. So the sanctity of the land that came as a result of conquest was gone. In the days of Ezra and Nehemiah, they settled the land. That Kedusha remains forever. Of course, the problem that we're going to deal with is a problem that everybody has dealt with in this Rambam. The impression, the clear impression that is left is that settlement is stronger than conquest. What would we logically have said? We would logically have said, conquest, that's strong. If conquest is removed, why isn't settlement removed? And furthermore, another question. What canceled out the conquest of Yehoshua? The fact that the Babylonians came and they conquered the land from Klal Yisrael. And what happened at the time of Churban Bayit Sheni? Jews were here. They settled. Oy, settlement! They were removed from the land. The settlements in Eretz Yisrael were burned to the ground. Rome destroyed the land. So what's the difference? What's the Rambam talking about? Why does the Rambam say that the conquest of Yehoshua over the settlement of Ezra, it remains holy until today? Rav Soloveitchik, in the shiur that appears in Al HaTshuva, he gives one answer. There is another answer that I heard from him in a shiur some years later, which means a long time ago. And the third answer is one that occurred to me as a result of the shiur that we said last week. So I'm going to give you the three answers. Answer number one, says Rav Soloveitchik. He says the following. And we're going to expand. There are some very fascinating ideas that emerge from this. Number one, he says the following. If we will study the conquest of Yehoshua, you know what we are going to find? Yehoshua crosses the Jordan. 3 million Jews cross the Jordan with him. The first battle is the battle for Jericho. The walls of Jericho come tumbling down. Then there's the battle of Ai. After that, the 7 years of conquest begin. He begins by conquering the south of Eretz Israel. He goes to war against the king of Hebron. Really, he goes to war. He's attacked. So he conquers the whole area south of Yerushalayim. And then he moves to the west, to the coast. Forces of Yehoshua make their way up the coast and they conquer from down in Plishtim up to Haifa and Akko. Then begins another major struggle, the campaign against the kings of the north. So this was the way in which the conquest began. When did they get to Yerushalayim? You know how long it took them to get to Yerushalayim after they entered Eretz Yisrael? Close to 400 years. They didn't get to Yerushalayim until the days of David HaMelech. Throughout the period of the Shoftim, the Mishkan was in Shiloh, in Nov, in Givon. There is present reference to Yerushalayim as Ir Yevus, a Yevusite city. It is finally 400 years after they come into Eretz Yisrael. And all sorts of struggles took place in those 400 years. Only then does David finally purchase the Temple Mount from a guy by the name of Aravna HaYevusi, and he sanctifies Har HaBayit, and then Shlomo HaMelech comes in 400 years. Says the Rav, what Yehoshua did was he moved from the periphery of Eretz Yisrael until they came to the Merkaz, the epicenter of Eretz Israel and the world. But it took a process of 400 years. When Ezra came back, Ezra and Nehemiah, when they returned, where did they come to? They came straight from Babel with the intent to build the walls of Yerushalayim and rebuild the Beth HaMikdash. Yehoshua came straight back to Yerushalayim. Ezra came straight back to Yerushalayim. And from Yerushalayim, like spokes coming out of a wheel, they began to spread out through Eretz Yisrael. The settlement began in Yerushalayim and continued throughout the country. So therefore, you know what the Rambam holds? The Kedusha of Ezra and Nehemiah was taking the sanctity of Yerushalayim and bringing it through all of Eretz Yisrael. And if so, just like the Kedusha of Mikdash and Yerushalayim is forever, the Kedusha of Ezra is forever. And what's very fascinating is in the Rambam, you see this, the Rambam in three places, he tells us that there's a difference between the conquest of Yahushua and the settlement of Ezra. And in only one place does he explain what the difference is. You know where he explains the difference? In Hilchot Bet HaBechirah, the laws of the Bet HaMikdash, after he tells us the source of Kedushat Yerushalayim, then he tells us the difference between the conquest of Yahushua and the settlement of Ezra, which indicates to us that the settlement of Ezra was an outgrowth of the Kedusha of Yerushalayim. The sanctity of Yerushalayim flowed outward throughout the land. Therefore, the destruction of the Bet HaMikdash afterwards did not remove the Kedusha of Eretz Yisrael. It remains today. Because Kedushat Eretz Yisrael in the days of Yehoshua was the extension and the expansion of the Kedushat Bet HaMikdash. That's one answer that he gives. In a subsequent shiur some years later, and this already is going to bring us to Sefer Bamidbar. Alright, you're asking a question tonight, I'll ask a question. How many books of the Torah are there? Alright. She says seven. Anybody say eight? Five, six. Alright. We know of Chamisha Chumshei Torah. The fact is, there's an opinion that says not that there are seven Chumashim, that would be a contradiction in terms. There are seven Zibitlach. Well, in Eretz Yisrael, of course, we know about Shviyot, you know, the Shviyot. There are seven books. Why are there seven books? There are seven books because Sefer Bamidbar is really three. Not one, but three. Why is it three? Because in Parashat Bahalotcha, we have two psukim. The two psukim in Parashat Bahalotcha, in Bamidbar, Perek Yud, the very end of Perek Yud, the last two psukim in Perek Yud, two famous psukim. You look in the Chumash, you will see before and after Vayehi bin Sawa, there are upside down nuns. Nunim hafuchin. In the Sefer Torah, there are upside down nuns before and after Parashat Vayehi bin Sawa. There are 85 letters in Vayehi bin Sawa. According to the halacha, 85 letters in certain respects has a halacha of a sefer. Because this is considered sefer b'pnei atzmo, a book all of its own. It is set off from before and after by the nunin hafuchin. The upside down nuns are just like brackets looking outward. Brackets. So that Sefer Bamidbar up until Vayehi bin Sawa is one sefer. The two psukim of Vayehi bin Sawa, another sefer. And the rest is another sefer. So there are seven, not five. What's the significance of the Nunin Hafuchin? What's the significance of this special parsha? So first of all, you have to, as you read through the parshiot, Bamidbar, Noso, and Bahalotcha, you're going to find a series of all sorts of parshiot. Some seem to be related to one another and others don't seem to be terribly connected to one another. Just a brief overview, and you'll see in all of these parshiot, first of all, Sefer Bamidbar begins with a census of the Jewish people. After the census is taken of the Jewish people, the the tribes are divided into four camps, and they are positioned around the Mishkan in the middle. The Levim are counted separately. Tasks are given to each one of the three families of the Levim, what it is that they are supposed to do when it comes to carrying the Beit HaMikdash, the Mishkan, from one place to the next. We also have the in Parashat Nassau, we have the dedication of the Mishkan. The Mishkan is finally established, dedicated. In Parashat Baha'alotcha, there we go into the sanctification and dedication of the Levim. And then, number of interesting parashiyot, one of them is a description of how Jews are to journey. How do they know that time has come to journey? When the Oron rises and begins to move, that was the signal to everybody to begin packing their things. They're beginning to move. As the Oron goes, so they move. The Oron, the Onon, the cloud, the pillar, when that stops, they stop. And so we are told, as they journeyed, the Onon went, they journeyed, Onon stopped, they stopped. Another parsha that tells us that Moshe has to make for himself trumpets. What was the purpose of the trumpets? The purpose of the trumpets was to call the congregation together, to call the elders together, to warn of attack from the enemy. And then finally, in the middle of Parshat Baha'alotcha, Moshe says to his father-in-law, by Yom Moshe Lechofov ben Ruel Amidjani, Moshe said to his father-in-law, Chofov, who was Yitro, Nosim anachnu al amakum, we are journeying to the place Asher Omar Hashem that God has said, Oto eten lachem. We are journeying to the place that God has said, I will give it to you. Come with us. And whatever good God has guaranteed us, that good you can share as well. And he says, no, I have to go home. I have to complete my affairs in Midian. I will not go with you. Rashi says that he wanted to go back to Midian in order to convert his family to Judaism. And Moshe persists, Al no tazav otanu, don't forsake us. You will be our eyes. You will lead us. You will advise us as you've done in the past. We hear no response. Yitro obviously goes back home. If you read through Parshiyot Bamidbar Noso and Baha'alotcha, do you know what you should begin to feel? You should begin to feel a rise in expectation, a rise of tension. There are all sorts of preparations taking place within the camp. People are being given their assignments and their jobs to be done. Everybody knows where they're supposed to be, how they're supposed to act, under what circumstances they begin to journey. There's an entire system that has been created so that these people can journey and march. What is Bamidbar, Noso, and Baha'alotcha? What's it all leading up to? Nosim anachnu. We are journeying to Eretz Yisrael. All of the preparation, all of the anticipation, all of the heightened exhilaration, you can feel it in the air of the psukim in these three parshas. You can feel that something festive, they're getting ready, the great moment is coming. If you read the psukim, you know what you should be overcome with? Reise fever. Reise fever? How do you say that in English? Huh? Travel excitement. I don't believe there's a term like travel excitement. There's nothing better than Reise fever. That's it, Reise fever. They're ready to journey. And at the last moment, just when they're about to journey, so Moshe tells his Shver, Nosim anachnu. Do you hear the Nunin? Nosim anachnu. We are journeying to the place that God has said, I will give to you. He doesn't go. The pasuk says, "Vayisu mehar Hashem." They journeyed from the mountain of God, derech shloshet yomim, a journey of 3 days. Everything, everything from the time of Yetziat Mitzrayim was leading up to this journey. 3 days they begin to journey. Where are they on their way to? They're on their way to Eretz Yisrael. They journey from the mountain of God, a journey of 3 days. And the Ark of the Covenant of God is journeying before them. 3 days ahead, in order to find for them a place of resting. They're on the way. They're on the way to Eretz Yisrael. It's then that Moshe says, said the Rav the following. How did Yoshua sanctify the land? How do you make the land Kodesh? How do you do it? What did he do? What was the instrument of Kedusha? So he says the instrument of Kedusha was the Aron. If you look into Yehoshua chapter Gimel, as 40 years later Jews are going to cross the Jordan finally, how do the waters of the Jordan split? When the Kohanim who are carrying, and twice, a description that appears only there and nowhere else in Tanakh, as the Kohanim who are carrying the Aron Brit Hashem, the Ark of the Covenant of God, Adon Kol Haaretz, the master of the whole land. As their feet touch the Jordan splits, Jews cross the Yarden, and the entry into Eretz Yisrael begins. What sanctified the land? Aron Brit Hashem, the Ark of the Covenant of God. That Aram, which is the Ark of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, who was Adon Kol Haaretz, that sanctified Eretz Yisrael. Said the Rav in classic Briska fashion, he said, the Aron sanctifies, but in one of two ways. There is the journeying Aron. Vayehi ben Soah Aron. There is the Aron that journeys. And then Uvenucha, there is the Aron at rest. And we'll see in a moment what the difference is. What's important over here is whatever happened to the Aron? What happened to the Aron? Where is the Aron? So there's a Rambam. The Rambam tells us precisely where the Aron is. The Rambam says the following. Even Haisa b'Migdash, there was a stone in the base in the Kodesh HaKodashim. B'ma'arovo, the western part of the Kodesh HaKadoshim on the Temple Mount. Sha'olecha ho'yo ha'aron munach, the Aron rested on that stone. Ulefanav, in front of it, there was the Tzinsenet Haman, there was a jar in which there was a sample of the mon, so the Jews for all time should be able to see the mon. U'mata Aron, the staff of Aron. U'be'et Shabandash Shlomo et Habayit, at the time that Shlomo HaMelech built the Beit HaMikdash, biyoda, and he knew, shesofo lecharev, the end is that the Beit HaMikdash is going to be destroyed, bonavo makom, he built a place, lignoz bo ha'aron, he built a place to hide the Aron, lemata, below, b'matmoniot amukot v'akalkalot, b'matmoniot, in a hidden place, amukot, very deep, a kalkalot, in all sorts of curvy ways, someplace below the Harabai. The Yoshua Melech, 200 years later, in the days of Yoshua, King Yoshua, when Egypt and Assyria started sending their armies through Eretz Yisrael, and he was afraid that something may happen to the Aron, Donzo b'makom shebono Shlomo, he hid it in the place that Shlomo had built. Parenthetically, just as a remark that occurred to me as I learned this Rambam. Shlomo HaMelech, when he built the Beit HaMikdash, knew that it was going to be destroyed. He knew that it was going to be destroyed, and therefore he prepared a place for the Aron to be hidden. And then at the same time, you know what he did? He made a Chanukat HaBayit for the Beit HaMikdash. A Chanukat HaBayit, that year they ate on Yom Kippur. It's there, the beginning of Malachim, everything is described.
Such a big simcha.
I'm wondering, what is Shlomo HaMelech so happy about?
He knows. Nobody else may know, but he knows that it's going to be destroyed. And not only that, he prepared already a miklat for the Ara. You know what you learn from this? A time of simcha is a time of simcha.
I don't have a right to make any demands under the Rabbeinu Shlomo to give me guarantees forever.
He gives you Har HaBayit, he gives you Yerushalayim, he gives you great gifts. Thank the Rabbeinu Shlomo for it. The gift may turn out to be problematic. Gamzei Yavor, that will also pass. But he made a Chanukas HaBayis on a grand scale, though he knew it was going to be destroyed. That's a parenthetic comment. V'hamei bin Yavin.
Whoever understands what I have in mind knows precisely, will know precisely what. The Rabbeinu Shlomo doesn't always have to be on trial. Okay, God, you know, I'm not going to make any ceremony about this based on Midrash until I see something that's perfect. Until I know you've given me a Beit HaMikdash that's going to remain forever. Otherwise, I'm on strike with you. I'm going to wait around. I'm not going to thank you for Eretz Yisrael and Medina Yisrael until such time that I got it all down pat. Until I make sure that everything is al pi Torah. Until that time, I'm not interested. Rabbeinu Shlomo, you're on trial. God is not on trial. We're on trial. He gives us something. Thank him. Thank him. All right, I couldn't help it. I just saw that. I saw it in the Rambam. It's clear. It's clear in the Rambam. It's there.
Says the Rav. Oron can sanctify Eretz Yisrael when it journeys, and the Oron sanctifies Eretz Yisrael when it's at rest. But there's a difference. Vayehi bin soah ha'aron, when the Oron began to journey, Vayomer Moshe, Moshe said, Kumo Hashem, arise, God, be afut soyevecho, and let your enemies be dispersed, v'yonusu misan echo miponecho, and those who hate you shall flee from before you. A journeying Oron sanctifies on condition that the enemies of God and the enemies of Israel are shattered.
But what happens if the enemy is the one who emerges victorious? Then that kedusha that came as a result of a journeying Aron is removed.
Uvenucha yoma. But when the Aron is at rest, how did Yehoshua sanctify the land? Through a journeying Aron. Wherever they went, the Aron went before them. How did Ezra sanctify Eretz Yisrael?
He came straight back to Yerushalayim, and you know what was in Yerushalayim? The Aron was there, deep below Har HaBayit. Uvenucha yoma. When the Aron is at rest, you know what Moshe said? Shuva Hashem rivvot alfei Yisrael. If tens of thousands of Jews will come back, that's all you need.
The kedusha of an Aron at rest is going to extend to all of Eretz Yisrael just as long as they settle, just as long as they come. In a Chazal it says that the Shekhinah descends upon 22,000 Jews.
Where do you have 22,000? Rivavot.
Rivavah is 10,000. Rivavot is 20. Alfei is 2,000. 22,000 Jews.
And you've got Kedusha. So that was the difference between the kibush of Yehoshua and the settlement of Ezra.
What sanctified the land at the time of the kibush of Yehoshua?
It was a journeying Aron. A journeying Aron sanctifies only on condition that the enemy is vanquished and destroyed.
Ezra sanctified the land through an Aron at rest. The Aron that was there deep below the Temple Mount. There the Kedusha comes
as a result of the fact that Jews come back. Rivavot alfei Yisrael. That's it. As you will go through the Parshiyot, you will see, of course, that right after Vayehi bin Soah Ha'aron, the tragedy of the Dor HaMidbar begins right after Vayehi bin Soah Ha'aron. Vayehi Ha'am Kimit Oninim, the people were complaining, and the situation begins to deteriorate rapidly until finally the Chet HaMeraglin, the sin of the Meraglin, and the great journey that Moshe had prepared Klal Yisrael for is aborted It grinds to a halt, and for 40 years they're going to have to wait in the desert until they're ready to go into Eretz Israel. The tragedy of the Dor HaMidbar begins right after Vayehi ben Soharim. All of the great expectation, all of the enthusiasm, all of the preparation, everything, Bamidbar, Noso, Bahalocha. And then it just doesn't work. They're not ready. Huh? I like what you're saying. It's a backward nun. The first nunim were facing forward. They're going forward. The backward nun. Very nice. They're not going in that direction. They're moving backward. Very good. The third answer is the answer that I gave. And the answer that I gave came to me as a result of last week's shiur. In last week's shiur, one of the psukim that we dealt with was a pasuk in Parashat Bechukotai. By now you should know it, Baal Peh. Vahashimoti ani et haaretz, God says, I will make the land desolate. Vishamamu aleha yevechem hayoshvimba. Your enemies who will come into the land will be desolate. This appears in the middle of the curses in Parashat Bechukotai. Says Rashi. Rashi quotes the Torah Kohanim. The Torah Kohanim says, Zumida tovol Yisrael, this was a good measure for Israel. What was the good measure? Shelo yimtzu ha'ivim nachat ruach, that the enemy is not going to find any nachat ruach in this land. The land is going to be desolate of inhabitants. The enemy is not going to be able to settle the land. This is the Torah Kohanim, and this is brought by Rashi from the Torah Kohanim. We also learned a few lines in the Ramban, and I will refresh your memory. The Ramban says, V'chein ma'ashama b'kan, what it says over here, V'shamamu aleha yevechem, that your enemies will be desolate in the land. He besora tova, this is good news. Mevaseret b'chol ha'goliyot, that comes to tell us in all exiles, shein arzenu mikabelet et oyevenu, that our land will not receive our enemies. V'gam zurayo gedol, v'avtoch olamu, this is a promise to us. Ki lo tintzor b'chol ha'ishuv, Eretz asher hitova urechava, you will not find throughout the world a land that had always been inhabited, a land that was as fruitful and lush as this land, v'hi chareva kamoa, and now the land is absolutely desolate. Ki me'oz yotzonu mimeno, because from the time that we went out of the land, lo kibla uma v'loshan, the land did not accept any nation or tongue. The kulam ishtadl lahushiva, everybody tries to settle the land, ve'ein le'el yadam, and they don't succeed. If so, we have an answer. We have an answer to the question that we've asked on the Rambam. Why is the conquest of Ezra, or the conquest of Yahushua, less than the settlement of Ezra? The conquest of Yahushua over by the conquest of the land in the Babylonians, whereas the settlement of the land by Ezra remains forever. I think the answer is simple. What can cancel conquest? You know what cancels out conquest, or what cancels the kedusha of conquest? Conquest. What therefore should cancel the kedusha of settlement? Settlement. But if there's a guarantee that no people will ever be able to settle the land, so there will never be anything that can undo the kedusha that comes as the result of settlement. There will never be settlement, mul settlement. There will never be settlement that will undo the settlement of Ezra. And I have a feeling, sort of the Ramban uses a strange word over here. The Ramban says the land is desolate. Ki me'oz yotzonu mimeno, from the time we went out of the land, it did not receive any other people. I don't know, would I have used the word yotzonu mimeno, we went out of the land? I don't know, I would have used the term golinu, me'atzenu, from the time that we arrived exiled. Ki me'oz gurashnu me'atzenu, from the time that we were cast out. You know what the Ramban says? It was like Yotzonu. We went out, you know, like we put a sign up on the store, out, you know, we'll be back soon. It took about 1900 years, and then we came back and we turned the sign around. You know, we're back. Me'oz yotzonu mimeno, the Ramban says. From the time we went out and over, we stepped out, but we're coming back. And nobody else is going to be able to settle the land anyway. It's going to be there waiting for us. So on the basis of what we learned last week, I think that explains the Ramban. The kibush of Ezra is cancelled out by the kibush, the conquest of Nebuchadnezzar. The settlement of Ezra and Nehemiah, there is no people that ever came and settled the land afterwards, so that there is no settlement that can cancel out that settlement. The conquest of Yahushua and the settlement of Ezra and Nehemiah became extremely important 200 years ago in the Beis Medrash of the Gaon Mivilna. In the Beis Medrash of the Vilna Gaon, his plan, as he saw min hashamayim beruach hakodesh, the plan for Eretz Yisrael was that Jews have to go back and begin to settle the land. Why did the Vilna Gaon send his Talmidim 200 years ago in order to return here? Because he felt that the first step in the process of Geula, the first step in that process must be begun by man. We have to start the process. And therefore he sent his Talmidim. Not only sent his Talmidim, he tried to go but did not succeed. If there was anything of the big things that the Baal Shem Tov and the Vilna Gaon agreed on, it was that we have to begin the settlement of Eretz Yisrael, because not only the students of the Vilna Gaon came, the Baal Shem Tov sent his students as well to settle Eretz Yisrael. I don't know, Mishklov, our street is, which Mishklov? There was a Mishklov, there was a Rav Hillel Mishklov, who was one of the students of the Vilna Gaon, and there was a Menachem Mendel Mishklov, who was one of the students of the Baal Shem. And they are one; those are the ones who came on Aliyah, because they sent their Talmidim ahead, and both the Vilna Gaon and the Baal Shem both tried to make the journey, and for all sorts of mysterious reasons, never made it, but had to return. But the sheet of the Vilna Gaon is that we have to begin to settle the land, and that's going to start the process. And he foresaw even more. He said, everything that we do for Eretz Yisrael has to be in two directions. One is the direction of Ezra and Nehemiah, and the other is the direction of Yahushua. The Yerishtem, you will settle, the Yeshaftem ba, and you will live in the land. Said the Gra, in the Schut, that you will settle the land, you will live in the land. If you'll go take possession of the land, then you will be able to live here. And then you will be able to sanctify it. So therefore he said, do you know how we're going to come back? We're going to come back through the means of Ezra and Nehemiah, b'chazakah, through settling the land. And then he also wrote, ule'et hatzorach, when there will be need, it will also be b'chazakah, through strength, through kibush. We will take the land through the settlement of Ezra and Nehemiah, and through the conquest of Yahushua. That clearly was the process. It was the Vilna Gaon and the Baal Shem who began the process of settlement, and then le'et hatzorech, when necessary, came the period of conquest. Vilna Gaon also said, you can check me, but believe me, the gematria of Yahushua is 391, the gematria of Ezra and Nehemiah is 391. So that there's something equal about the two of them. Both of them are going to be necessary in the course of this process. So here we have our three answers on the Rambam, the difference between kibush of Yahushua and the settlement in the days of Ezra and Nehemiah. We have the approach of the Vilna Gaon, and I find it also in a few psukim in Tehillim, Perek Kuf Beis of Tehillim. It says the following: V'ato Hashem la'olam teishev. You, God, will forever. You will forever be there. V'zichron upon your memory is l'dor v'dor. Atotokum, you will arise to Rachem Tzion, and you will have mercy on Tzion. Ki eit lechenen al kivom moed, because the time has come that Tzion will find favor. Vom moed, the time has come. So I have a feeling you know what the Dovra Melech is saying over here. As far as the Kedushat HaMikdash for Yerushalayim, why is there Kedushat HaMikdash for Yerushalayim forever? Because the Ato Hashem La'olam Teshev, God is there forever. Shechina ain't of a tale of the divine presence is never bottled. The Kedusha that came in the days of Ezra was the result of what? What made the and extended the Kedusha? The fact that Jews came to settle there. And then, ultimately, Ato Sokum Terachim Tzion, you will arise and you will have mercy on Tzion, because Bom Moed, the time for the process of Geula has come. So what do you want? You want Kirotzu Avodecha et Avoneha that Afora Yechonenu. All you want is that your servants should want the earth of Eretz Yisrael and to love her stones. And then you know what's going to happen? If they're going to come back and they're going to do that, V'yiru goyim et shem Hashem, then the nations of the world are going to see the name of God, V'chol malchei ha'aretz et kvodecha. Your honor and your glory, Kivono Hashem Tzion, because God is the one who built Zion. Nir'o b'chvodo, his glory and his honor is clearly seen. And therefore, further on, David HaMelech says, therefore, our responsibility is l'saper b'tzion shem Hashem. In Zion, we should relate the name of God, u'tihilato, and his praise is in Yerushalayim. The Kedusha of Migdash and Yerushalayim, and subsequently and ultimately the Kedusha of all of Eretz Yisrael comes through Yerushalayim, Kedushat HaMikdash, as a result of Kiratzu Avodecha Tavoneho Betafori Yochanenu, the fact that Jews have come to settle the land. One final comment, taking us back to the beginning of this year, the first answer that we gave from Rav Soloveitchik about the process of conquest and then the process of settlement, that Yehoshua is the one who went from the periphery until he finally came to the center, where it was Ezra and Nehemiah who came directly to the center of Kedusha, and from there they spread outward. What he used that, and that's always has a strong impression on me, it was a tshuva shir, so he talked about two kinds of balei tshuva. There are two kinds of people that do tshuva. There is the person for whom the process of tshuva is a struggle. It's a lifetime struggle. You know, we're always fighting with the Yetzer Hara. Sometimes the Yetzer Hara gets the best of us. Sometimes we get the best of him. Life is a struggle. It's a moral and an ethical struggle. We're fighting. We want to do the right thing. It isn't always easy to do the right thing. We don't always know what the right thing is. There are times that we fall and that we stumble, and then there are times that we rise and we continue to walk tall. That's the process of life. There's an ongoing struggle. There are people for whom life from beginning to end is a struggle just in terms of life itself. And then there's the spiritual, the moral, and the ethical struggle throughout life. And then there are people who a moment of great inspiration, a moment of great inspiration, and the entire course of their lives, of their life changes. Everything changes. We once mentioned the famous story with Franz Rosenzweig, one of the great Balei Tshuva of this century. In 1917, he was a German Jew. He had decided that he was going to convert to Christianity, and it was a Yom Kippur in Berlin, and he was walking through the streets, and from an alleyway, he heard a sound screaming. So he decided to investigate. He walked in and did not emerge until Yom Kippur was over, and he went on to become one of the great Balei Tshuva of this century. What were the sounds? There was a Karlina Shtibel, a stolen shtiebel over there. Anybody who knows, who's ever been in a stolen shtiebel, I davened in stone for 7 years. They scream the davening. The davening is a davening that is fire. Fire. So here it was. It was the great moment of inspiration that changed one's whole life. So there are two kinds of Bali Tshuva. There's the one who goes through a lifetime, a process of struggle and difficulty, falling, getting up, moving, rising, one step ahead, sometimes two steps back, then a few more steps ahead. That was the process. That was the process of Yehoshua. The process of Ezra was going straight back to Yerushalayim, and there in the great burst of Kedusha, begin to rebuild Chomot Ha'ir and rebuild the Bet HaMikdash and establish a Kedusha that remains forever.